Welcome to the Ignite Physio Podcast. This podcast inspires physiotherapists and other health professionals to continue learning and growing in their practice and throughout their career. We explore professional issues with a fresh lens and look inward, delving into topics that help to expand our capacity for growth. This is episode number 46, and I am Andrew.
And I'm Maxie.
So we're here today. It's been a little while since we've done a recording. And the last time we talked about why we need to lean into discomfort and why growth requires that. And so, so today I think we're going to be chatting a little bit about burnout, because I feel like this has been a theme that has come up in the Pain Science Summit that you were presenting at recently,
yes,
right?
Yes, San Diego Pain Summit. Sandy Hilton and Mark Milligan presented on it. And I believe Shrana Prasad had it within her presentation, and Shelley Prosco with her compassion presentation on compassion. I believe it came up there too. So it feels like it is something that's in the ether for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, I had done a survey recently with PTs who are part of the Ignite community. And what was interesting, I think we had over 150 survey respondents. It was about 18% that said they were experiencing symptoms of burnout. When I looked at the data, there was about 13% that reported that they were looking at making a career change or looking at opportunities for non-clinical work. So I think it's definitely for a certain number of people in the profession, there's definitely a challenge around staying energized, satisfied, and motivated to continue with the day in, day out of clinical work. You know, I think we've chatted a little bit about this offline, about some of the conversations that I've had with newer grads who have actually felt quite discouraged in clinical practice and, you know, even had been considering looking at leaving the profession altogether. And I think that, you know, those were, you know, challenging to hear that, just sort of the rawness of that and the frustration that they were feeling.
Do you know if those more junior physios, were they in private practice? Were they versus hospital settings or institutional settings in that way?
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, there was definitely some things that were, you know, factors that differ between those folks. I mean, I think sometimes it can be a little bit of the patient population. And if you're having a really challenging patient population, you know, challenging WCB or MVA patients or chronic pain patients, I think that can be quite draining, right?
Yeah, just with the nature, the complexity of different systems that are involved working with those patients. And so it's not just somebody coming in with an ankle sprain and they want to get back to playing soccer, right? You're dealing with different layers of systems, right?
Well, and I think, especially when you're a newer grad, I mean, you know, trying to navigate that and the nuance of relationship and expectations and emotions that are coming at you, with these patients.
Yeah.
And then also just trying to figure out, how am I actually going to treat them well? And, dealing with, you know, atypical, you know, recovery times and that, right? So I think that definitely was one of the factors that seemed to come through, which I think that's hard regardless. But I think it's really hard when you don't have some experience to back you up on that, right? And then I think the other, you know, sort of theme was around just the grind of patient care in a private clinic setting, you know, and just not feeling like you're actually getting enough, you know, seeing enough patients, and just sort of, I think, the financial stress of that. And I think sometimes it's hard to know, okay, you know, is, you know, what are the expectations or what are reasonable expectations, especially when you're jumping into a clinical setting that, you know, you're just sort of getting your feet wet and then having to make a living and do all that and then deliver good quality care. And I think the expectations are just continuing to go up, especially in, I think, in a private setting as well, right? I think so. It's hard because you're dealing with sort of expectations on multiple levels. There's expectations that come in at you from your manager, or, you know, your boss. You've got expectations from patients that are going to be higher. You've got your own expectations that you want to deliver good quality care, right? And so it's just been interesting having some of these conversations, looking at, you know, how people responded in the survey that I sent out recently, and just seeing how, okay, well, how do we improve that situation? How can we help clinicians who are maybe feeling, you know, burnt out, emotionally exhausted, you know, and just sort of exploring that topic a little bit, because I think it is something that is real. I think that a lot of times people want to hide that.
Yeah. Well, is there shame around that? You can't handle it. You're not able to handle it. We should be able to handle it. This is, you know,
I'm a professional.
I should be able to handle these things, right? And, you know, so when you're talking about it, there's so much, like, as you're talking here, I'm jotting just ideas that are coming to my head, because I'm not like studying this as deeply as you are. So yeah, it's kind of, for me, it's there's a lot of things that are converging, like with newer grads, more junior therapists, you know, with educational system, you know, we have, I'll just speak for Canada with, you know, mm-hmm. the number of, you know, come in, it's an MSc, mm-hmm. PT, and it's two and a half years.
Yeah.
Are students prepared enough? Have they been able to digest enough as a professional to step into that mm-hmm. role? Because there's an incredible amount of responsibility, not solely to the patients, I shouldn't say just to patients, not solely to the individuals that you're seeing mm-hmm. and working with, but also to insurance companies, you know, I remember, you know, being a new grad and writing medical legal reports.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? Yeah. Like, I get like medical, what?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. So... And I was an expert witness.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah, like with before I'd reached, you know, 4 years into my career, I was an mm-hmm. expert. Like, you know, so those are sorts of situations that you're not, you know, of course, when you move into a profession or a new sort of area, there are going to be new challenges and new experiences. Mm-hmm. So I don't think we can say, well, you know, you can be prepared for everything and you shouldn't be pushed.
No.
Because it is a growth curve. Yeah. And there is a growth curve when you actually get into practice.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I think we talked about, you know, in the last podcast, how, you know, employers can make that growth curve less steep just in terms of, you know, how much time they're giving their new grads with assessments and with treatments. And I know that I even, you know, back in the day, you know, and like my employer, when it worked in private practice, did that. I said, okay, so, you know, so for a certain period of time, we're going to give you more time with your assessments, more time with your patients. But then we do expect you to reduce that time, right? As you become more comfortable, more proficient.
Yeah. And it's funny because I think that as you, you know, the longer you're in practice, you sometimes forget those periods of burnout that you do experience, right? And I think you sort of think, you know, because even myself, I was like, man, I've had that for sure, where I've just felt emotionally exhausted. And it's interesting to think about how we don't necessarily want to think about those times mm-hmm. in our lives, right? It's almost like we want to forget those. We find our sort of our happy place, right? In terms of what works for us, you know, in terms of clinical work. Because I think it is just a tricky situation, right? You're especially when you're feeling emotionally exhausted and you're, you know, you almost develop a resentment towards your patients, right? Because you're feeling that disconnect. And that was some of what came through in these conversations as well, where you almost feel this, you know, what you're having to give off externally in terms of your interaction with your patient is very different than the interaction that you're feeling internally, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting thing to think about, maybe even just to explore that a little bit, is about this sort of this dichotomy that exists, that we can, in essence, sort of be... we almost lack an integrity of what's going on in terms of our experience, mm-hmm. right? And because what we have to convey professionally is very mm-hmm. different than our...
Right. So is that authentic? So I guess, because what I start to think about is that sense of co-regulation. So, mm-hmm. you know, when we're talking about therapeutic relationship and being present, right? And being receptive, I mean, that as therapists, we need to be that, right?
Yeah.
But the act of being present, if it's genuine, should be regulating for us as well.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like if it's not just, I need to convey a professional face.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. But if it's actually a genuine sense of being present in the moment and regulated, so calm, you know, and how you go about doing that. So mm-hmm. in the micro situations, we might get to this talking about systems and how the disconnect between what therapists perceive as the values of the system versus the values of clinicians and patients, you know, that's a, when there's incongruence there, that is a real challenge.
Absolutely.
Right. But when we're talking just about the micro moments, you know, with patients, you know, how you prepare to go into mm-hmm. your day
mm-hmm.
as a physical therapist,
mm-hmm.
as a professional,
mm-hmm.
knowing the kind of work
mm-hmm.
that you will be doing,
mm-hmm.
right? It's almost like, I don't know, I'm going to turn it on its head a little bit. And it's like, maybe we shouldn't necessarily expect the system to change or patients to change
mm-hmm.
to take care of us,
mm-hmm.
right? Maybe a part of it is us acknowledging that this is the type of work that we do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so how do we need to go into our days and how do we need to prepare? It's like an athlete. Yeah. If I don't prepare to go into competition, yeah. I'm going to suck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to make light of, you know, systems, and I don't want to seem like I'm piling on to physical therapists to say, well, this is one more responsibility. Mm-hmm. But really, as professionals, who are you as a professional? Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Yeah.
How do you embody that? Yeah. And how, like, psychotherapists,
yeah.
right? You know, I would say probably the good ones know how to, because they've been trained in that way to be able to take care of themselves.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Now they don't work on the same sort of schedule as we're working right? It's a different setup, yeah. right? In terms of the amount of time maybe they spend with the people that they work with. But at the same time, we're not socialized that way.
Yeah.
In physio.
Yeah.
Well, and I think it's interesting because, I mean, I think, you know, those times when you know, you're busy, you know, let's say that you're, you know, whatever you say, you're working an afternoon shift, you're busy doing stuff in the morning. Yeah. You know, you go in, you're going to see your patients, and the second patient in starts tearing up on you and having really sort of a strong emotional reaction to the pain that they're in. And all of a sudden, you can be caught off guard as a therapist if you haven't necessarily sort of grounded yourself well prior to being in that situation. Because all of a sudden, you're like, you've got to switch gears 100% here, right, to get into that place. And that can be a really hard transition in the moment, you know, if you have not taken that time out, right? And I think that, you know, some of that is that preparation and self-care has to be done outside of those days, right? But I think what you're saying is, what I'm hearing is that there also is some of that preparation that we need to be doing before we enter in those situations, whether it's before a shift or whether it's before a patient interaction, is what can we do to help regulate ourselves so that we can actually be present.
Yeah.
So that the patient can be present and we can create that space, right?
Yes. So that your neurobiology, your state is unconsciously influencing the patient's state.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think what you're saying too is that when we do feel this duplicity or this sort of incongruency in terms of what we're feeling internally with what we feel we need to project to the patient, some of that self-regulation can actually help us to come back into line, right? Is that?
That's what I'm saying. So if you have ways, rituals, things that you do, whether it's breath work. So really it's, if we go to a very basic level, it's very basic physiological functions, right? Breath, attention to body, right? It could be a psychological keyword. It could be something that you do. It could even be as you enter into interactions with patients, what helps you if you enter in the same way, you know? I think there are ways that we can do that.
Yeah.
What I also wanted to say was, I think we need to be compassionate with ourselves as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're not going to be on as a clinician every single day. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be on with every single patient, right? And so this, I think we need to cultivate compassion for our patients, right? Mm-hmm. And also compassion for ourselves that, you know, it's a returning. Mm-hmm. We're continually returning to try to be that person or that, and that therapist, that embodied therapist, when we enter into interactions with patients on a daily basis and with, you know, colleagues and with, you know, with our spouses, you know what I mean? It's a constant, it's a constant returning, you know, and I don't know that we should expect perfection out of ourselves in that because it is a journey. It's not a destination. It's a deepening.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder too, like, you know, for the therapists that maybe are feeling, you know, stuck in this place where they have a hard time actually being present with their patients or maybe feeling like almost a resentment or an animosity to the patient. Those are really hard situations to be in. I mean, I think it's a good red flag to say, hang on a second, like, this is a warning light on the car.
Yes.
This needs an oil check.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
pull over.
Right. Yeah. And I think that we shouldn't be ignoring when those situations happen. Right.
Yeah.
Because I think that to me is, you know, is a pretty significant indicator to say, hang on a second, I'm not in a good place here myself. So it's going to be very difficult for me to be in a good place for my patients.
Yes.
And so what do I need to do here to re-energize, to recharge, to whatever it is, to create a better, healthier interaction, right? But I think part of, so I think there's that step, like pulling over to the side of the road. But I think if I'm extrapolating from what you're saying, perhaps, is can I, when I recognize that in myself, can I return to a place of self-regulation and just say, you know what? Can I let go of what my thoughts are about this patient? Can I let go of maybe the frustration that I feel with the fact that they're not improving? Can I let go of the expectations I have of myself in this moment so that I can then just be present and maybe try to let go even temporarily of maybe some of the extra baggage that I'm carrying or the gremlins that are on my shoulder, right? I mean, sort of the Brené Brown talks about, you know, what are those gremlins? You know, I think, can we do that? And maybe just allow there to be some space that we can create in our own heads. Hey, Andrew here. Just a quick break from the podcast as I wanted to let you know about an innovative web-based tool that I'm building that's going to help optimize your treatment approach and achieve better results with less stress. The reason I'm building this app is to help myself and other therapists more deeply understand our patients so that we can avoid the potential pitfalls that can jeopardize treatment outcomes. So much of what impacts treatment is hidden below the surface, and this tool will help adjust how you approach each patient based on who they are. Think of it as Outcome Measures 2.0. Make sure to check out the show notes for a link to sign up to get my latest updates. All right, back to the show.
Yeah, and even as you say that, I exhaled, right? Like I literally went, oh, there's some space here. How would I be different with the person across from me? If there was that space, right? If I didn't have, if I wasn't carrying with me all of these expectations and all the patient's expectations, all of my expectations, all my employer's expectations, and I could just for a moment just let go of those expectations and just be with this patient and let it unfold. And let and trust that we are both here for purpose. And that we will get to that purpose without anything having to be forced or having to be
a striving.
That striving, right? And I mean, physios, you know, pretty high achievers, I would say. Like, you know, but you know, in school, like, you know, we've been striving.
Well, and I think there's always an expectation that we are striving to get the patient better, right? And I think there is always that, there's always that tension that exists, but I think even just like in that, those moments to be able to let go of some of that expectation, perhaps that could help to settle down some of that, perhaps that frustration, animosity that's just building up, that can build up with patients, right? Because I think that's a really hard place to treat from, right? When you are in that place, because you, you know, the patient is going to pick up on that in some level, right?
Well, no, exactly. And they will. That is the sense of safety. Like that is the sense of that's a, that neuroception that we have that's happening outside of our conscious awareness. And we're picking that up. And as soon as we're, when we're in that place, we have, we start as therapists start to close down, right? In terms of our, the scope that we can see, the positivity that we can see a situation with, we begin to develop a negativity bias or enhance a negativity bias. And then we start to narrow, right? And so patients will pick up on that, whether they know they're picking up on it or not, you know, and you, it's going to be the patients that, for whatever reasons, are bringing up this more in you.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and it's been interesting, you know, because I've been doing some more reading and talks around burnout. And it's, you know, when you look at, you know, one of the most popular, you know, and well-used tools for evaluating or assessing burnout is the Maslach Burnout Inventory. That inventory has three, basically, subscales. So one is emotional exhaustion. Second is depersonalization, and the third is personal achievement, or this this lack of efficacy, right? And I think that emotional exhaustion seems to be one of the early warning signs of, or one of the key areas for burnout. And I think that it's something that we often can minimize and trivialize when we're feeling emotionally burnt out or emotionally exhausted, right? That you're just sort of feeling worn out. And I think that we then try to push through that. And I think then we start to then have these issues of conflict internally with our patients because we're now feeling a resentment because we don't feel like we have anything to give. Right. And so I think that's interesting because I've been looking at that, you know, just in my own life, how easy it is to miss these markers, yeah. Right?
Well, and to go into patterns of behavior. So some people will push through.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'd be one of those people I'm a blunt instrument.
Yes.
Right? I can hold on any kind of physical, you know, sensation or whatever. But other people may withdraw.
Yeah.
Right? And become more withdrawn.
Yes.
Right? And so that's neither is regulating.
No, it's not. Right. And I mean, it's interesting because I just think of, you know, I was at a course that Neil Pearson had put on pain and just talking about, you know, pain is really our protection system. Right. Mm. And it's this lack of safety. Right. Mm. And so to me, the question I have then is, okay, well, if we're feeling emotionally exhausted and we are struggling with staying, you know, grounded, it becomes really difficult for us to feel safe. Because we are actually just feeling like we're on the verge of what's going to happen, right? But then what happens is that, as you said, we then cannot convey and help to facilitate a place of safety with our patients because we aren't even in that place, right? So who's leading us into that place of safety, right? If we're not helping to facilitate that, the patient is looking to us to take the lead on that, given the relationship, right?
Absolutely. And so that's a bit of an odd sort of thing, but relationship is about reciprocity. So if we can be regulated, right, in a relationship or begin that regulation, like even just a bit, you don't have to go in the most grounded, you don't have to go in yogi like, right? Like, you know, grounded, you know, but even if you can be more, then the patient picks up on that and you start to get into that safe pace with the patient. It's a co-created space.
It's a third space.
Yeah. It's a co-created space. And so that safety, actually, you feed off the patient's safety. The patient feeds off of your safety. It's not linear so much, right? And so, and also within, and I don't want to go down the therapeutic relationship road, but even within interactions, things can, the boat can, you know, there can be like a wave, right? You know, and you have to kind of reset yourself.
Yeah.
But if you were going back to talking about that sense of burnout, it's like, I think that's one thing that can be really important. And also just on Twitter, the last couple, 2-3 days, some of the interactions that I've had with one of the patients, Twitter handle is at living with pain, I think.
Oh,
Tina.
Yeah.
And Bob, who's a physio, Bob Vermeeren. And just talking about, I think sometimes what we maybe, I'm going to put this out there, do we look at the patient's situation when they come in and we're all on journeys, okay, you know, and patients come into us at certain periods of their life, certain times of their life, and certain times of our life as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know what I mean? Yeah. We're colliding, right? Yeah. And I think sometimes maybe we take it too personally when maybe patients don't progress as we think they should be progressing or as they think they should be progressing. Mm-hmm. And even though we feel an incredible responsibility to be able to help people, you can only help as much as where you're at and where they're at. And that you want to let this person, you can only do the best that you can do for them. And if and if you're operating through your integrity, you know, and you recognize I am doing the best that I can. Maybe this patient needs another therapist. You know what I mean? Like I've exhausted what I feel like I can exhaust, and I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I don't know that I can do anymore. Yeah. But this, we're both on journeys, and we take it really personally, I think, and we take it to heart.
Which can also then contribute to burnout, right? Because we just feel this weight on our shoulders, right?
Yeah. So it's this balance between not abdicating responsibility,
right? No.
Everybody's on a journey, and so I don't have to care.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
We're not saying that. Don't somebody tweet me.
Yeah,
exactly. But also that there's this I guess what it comes down to is attachment. Attachment to another person's journey. Right. And how closely we attach to them for our experience of success or failure. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And that's maybe that's more it. It's about the attachment to it. We need attachments.
Yes.
And we also need to know when they're not functional.
Exactly.
When they're not serving us.
So then let's say that you feel really attached to an outcome, you know, this patient's progress, how do we help to detach from that outcome, right? Like, 'cause that's a That's a tough one.
Yeah.
It's not like you can just say on, off.
No.
I'm no longer attached.
No longer attached, or there are other things that create that attachment too. Job security.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's not
as and good. A certain level of investment and attachment can sometimes be a good thing with a patient, right? Because they feel like you're in their corner.
Well, and certainly, and I'm not suggesting that attaching like that isn't healthy, right?
Yes.
Because it is. It's you're giving of yourself,
yes.
right? If I take the therapists and patients that I've interviewed and listened to seriously, that's one of the things that there was a theme was that, you know, you're committed.
Yes.
Right? You're committed to understanding me. You're committed to acting on my behalf,
yes.
right? And with
being
me,
a champion
right?
For you.
Yeah. And creating that safe space, you're committed to that. I mean, I think that's important.
So we almost have to separate out that commitment to the person and the attachment to an outcome. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that is. Maybe that's
good. Yeah,
could we
create a little bit of a divide there to say, okay, you know what? I can be committed to the health and wholeness and progress, or even just to the person, right?
Yeah.
But maybe I can hold on a little less tightly, especially with my sense of self in terms of what the outcome we can achieve with the person I'm committed to.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
That's very good.
No, because I mean it's a hard thing, right? Because I mean we can because it's true. Like, you know, that sense of commitment to the patient, I think, is a very positive element to a healthy therapeutic relationship, right?
Yes.
But then it's true, we can get ourselves into a pickle when we attach ourselves too much to the outcome that we want, or when we don't see that outcome happening, we now start to internalize that. And perhaps there's shame that results, or there is, you know, this sense of disappointment or this lack of compassion, which then contributes to this burnout and emotional exhaustion, because now we are just, there's all these other conversations going on in our head, right?
Yeah.
That we have a hard time letting go of.
Yeah. And you push harder, you know, or you withdraw, or, you know, you're not grounded anymore. So, So then what do you do in those situations? Do you seek out? So we're talking, so here we go. We're talking about, now this, we're going off here because I don't even think we planned on talking about this part. But we're talking about the therapist and we're talking about the patient as though they are on islands, unless they're like, we're in an interaction together, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're speaking about like therapists as though we're on an island.
Mm-hmm.
We have no support.
Mm-hmm.
We have no social connection.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, and maybe that's the way we feel.
Yeah.
Maybe that's actually the way we feel. Like we are alone.
Yes.
All right. So when that sense of aloneness, all right, and maybe loneliness, professional loneliness in some ways, that contributes to a sense of unsafety.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're not safe. We become physiologically dysregulated, right? That is true, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so even when we're talking about, we don't want to start going into literature on loneliness. I haven't read a lot of it, but what I have read is that it's associated with a lot of health conditions, right? You know, and mental health, physical health.
Yeah.
So if we, and can you imagine young therapists,
mm-hmm.
you know, feeling like they're on an island,
mm-hmm.
right? And yes, their boss might, and you know, but it's not, we need that social connection,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think part of the reason why I went to work, I left private practice and went to work on an interdisciplinary team is because that's what I felt I needed.
Yeah.
I needed that sense of connection.
Yeah.
Right. And also, like, I played sports all my life, team sport all my life. So team was very valuable to me.
Yeah.
It was one of the values that I had, right? And so, but maybe that's a piece of it. I mean, psychotherapists, like, debrief, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come together, like most psychotherapists, I think, have, you know, another therapist or another two therapists where they talk about their baggage, like, and what's coming up for them and what's,
mm-hmm.
what are barriers for their, you know, ability to be with patients, but also for their own personal growth. So this isn't just about also us learning and growing for our patients' benefit. It's us learning and growing for our own benefit.
Yeah, exactly.
As human beings.
Yeah.
Like, we play these roles.
Yeah.
Right? Patient, therapist, but really we're human beings.
Yeah.
And we're moving together, right? We're rolling along together. So So maybe it's also about seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Like popping out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And can we start to create some more intentionality in terms of the interactions we have maybe with colleagues? Maybe it's not necessarily a mentoring or mentee relationship. Yeah. It could just be like, hey, I'm just going to get together with another coworker for coffee.
Yeah.
And chat up, like, let's just hear about what's going on for even for each other, right? Because I think a lot of times it's not even necessarily that we need guidance. We just need someone to be able to explore with and just share what's going on.
Right? Well, look at us.
Well, yeah.
This turned into a podcast, for God's sakes. Exactly. I mean.
Yeah. Right? That was just started off as coffees.
Yeah.
Just chatting about stuff.
Just chatting about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that, I mean, because sometimes it feels like, this is what I always think is the challenge, is that you sometimes can feel like, okay, I'm alone. Maybe I'm feeling lonely professionally, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I have other relationships, but no one really gets what I'm going through.
You can't
through,
go home necessarily. You know, it's harder to go home and talk to your partner, your spouse, or a friend, your roommate about
what's going on, right? But then it's all of a sudden there's this barrier of like, oh, well, but I now need a mentor because that's apparently what I need, right? But then you're like, well, I don't have that. And my work environment doesn't support that or just doesn't facilitate that, whatever the situation is. And so then we again feel stuck because now we're not moving ahead in any way with that loneliness, right? So maybe a simpler option is to say, hey, I can ask a classmate, a coworker, another therapist, let's just go grab a coffee. Right?
Yeah.
I'd love to, and you know what?
And it's a monthly thing.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just have some structure to it. But I think that takes a lot of the pressure off to somehow find a seasoned mentor who now there's this other level of pressure that exists with that. Right?
Yeah, and that's a whole other conversation, all right? Just in terms of mentorship and relational learning and what a mentor is and you know what I mean? Because that sets up a whole power dynamic.
Yes.
Right? And it might not be a power dynamic that you need.
Or it will not help you create safety, right? And like, I mean, we talk about safety. Well, maybe that power dynamic actually will not support, like it's not necessarily contributing to a safe place for you internally, depending on where you're at, right?
Yeah. So it's, I think that's, and I know you and I have talked in the past. I mean, physicians have had Blint groups, right? Mm-hmm. Where they come together and talk more about their challenges with more psycho-emotional components of care with their patients or the therapeutic relationships with patients and how to work through some challenges in relationship. But I don't know that we've done that. I don't think we've done that as physiotherapists, right? That we feel that sense of supporting one another and that sense of we feel community, I think, in terms of if you do manual therapy, you're part of the manual therapy community, especially if you have your Part Bs, well, then you're part of the community. But then that also kind of focuses what you talk about,
exactly.
Right? You know? And so, I don't know, maybe it would be a value to have sorts of like groups.
Yeah.
Like, you know, where it's, you get together and it can be as formal, as informal as you want.
Yeah.
You can bring up cases, you can talk about different things or different challenges, but that you have this sense of feeling like you're supported.
Yeah. And I mean, I think trying to keep it uncomplicated, I think is key, right? Because I think when it gets complicated, then we just don't do anything with it. And then we just stay in that same place. We stay emotionally exhausted. We stay dysregulated, you know, and then we end up coming to some kind of breaking point, you know, internally, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where then you end up feeling like maybe I'm in the wrong profession or maybe I just don't feel like, you know, you just get this resentment in life generally that starts to spill over into other areas, which doesn't need to be there, right? We don't need to get to that place. And I think if we can start to pick up on some of these cues earlier on and start to say, okay, how can I regulate myself more effectively, right? With my patients, but also in life.
In life.
Yeah.
And so use different mechanisms for that.
Exactly.
So there's social mechanisms for that. There's, you know, mechanisms, personal mechanisms for that or strategies for that.
So anyways, well, this has been good. We've gone on a few different tangents today, which never fits.
As per usual.
As per usual. All right. Well, next time we'll pick up where we left off and keep the conversation going.
Keep the conversation going. You bet.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. It's great having you on the show today. Now, if you've been enjoying the new show, I'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes, as this just helps more people find out about the podcast, and we'd love to get your feedback.
And if you want to check out the show notes from the podcast, just go to ignitephysio.ca
/podcasts.
And if there's any topics that you want us to cover, just shoot us an email at hello@ignitephysio.ca, and we'll make sure to get back in touch with you and see what we can do there. So anyways, thanks for joining us on the show today. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.